My brother keeps a human head in his closet. I hope I don't end up that way.
This thing, it's gonna follow you. Somebody gave it to me. And I passed it to you. It could look like someone you know, or it could be a stranger in a crowd. It could look like anyone.
Help! Santa Claus only brings presents to them that's been good all year. To the ones that ain't done nothing naughty. All the other ones. All the naughty ones. He punishes. You see Santa Claus tonight, you better run, boy. You better run for your life.
Bring me one of those chickens.
You got money to pay for it?
You paid for it.
No, but we're the king's men. So, you got money?
Not a penny. I'll still take that chicken.
You don't seem to understand the situation.
I understand that if any more words come pouring out your mouth, I'm going to have to eat every chicken in this room.
You lived your life for the king. You're gonna die for some chickens.
Someone is.
The symbol is associated with a pagan deity named Bagul. He consumes the souls of human children. Early Christians believed that Bagul actually lived in the images themselves and that they were gateways into his realm.
I am seriously positive these were not here. How would we have, just made a campsite in between three piles of rocks just by coincidence?
You don't think this is strange?
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I'm well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I am fine, Phil.
Excellent. And in the state of Massachusetts?
Hi, we're on the Abe here.
Abe, how are you?
I'm doing good.
And a Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. For folks who are new to this podcast, we are Dark Discussions, as stated. And what we do is we basically critique and review movies, basically horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, art house, grindhouse, midnight movies, trailer films, or whatever you call them, drive-in films, all that type of stuff. And we basically try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. On a side note, Eric, we do have a website.
We do. It is www.darkdiscussions.com. You can go there and find a whole bunch of stuff. On the right-hand side of the front page, you'll find some links to friends of the podcast. Front and center, actually, hang on, I'll talk about that in a second. At the top of the page, we have links to an article section where you can find articles written by myself as well as others. You can also find the audio section where we have every episode of this podcast as well as all the spin-off podcasts of Dark Discussions available to download for free at no cost to you. Because we love you. And on the front page and right in the center is a link to our Patreon account. Patreon allows you to financially support your online artists. So if you'd like to help us offset the cost of producing this podcast, you can follow that link or you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. And for every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover on the show. All the entries are collected and drawn on a quarterly basis, and we take one of the user-submitted Patreon picks and do a show on it. So if you'd like to do that, you can follow the link on the front page at darkdiscussions.com or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions.
Yep, that's right. And it's all random which Patreon film we do. We do a random generator number, and the last one we did was a week or two ago, and it came out to be Witchboard, which is an upcoming episode. We do have Deathgasm as a recorded episode that has not been released yet because it still has to be edited. And the Patreon is very highly regarded by us. For example, last week, right before we recorded our episode called Midsummer, we had a hard drive crash and the computer is fried. And so I had to go out and buy a brand new computer.
Did you really?
I swear to God, yeah.
Wow.
Damn.
I know. Yeah, yeah. It came back for a little bit and Windows came up. And then, so I left the computer on just to, you know, whatever. And then suddenly out of the blue, it said failure. And then since then, I've had the black screen of death.
Oh,
and,
my God. So yeah. Was that the machine that you initially purchased, or is that the one that you bought to replace that one?
This was my initial one.
Okay. Well, yeah. I guess that's good news. At least it was the really bad machine that croaked.
But right. Why were you using the really bad machine?
Because it was there and he needed to.
Exactly. So basically, the good machine croaked because it just malfunctioned, eventually got old or whatever. And I had to go use the crappy machine as our recording machine last week. And so I had to replace the good one with a new one. And that's what we're recording on today.
The machine.
We almost lost Midsummer too because I recorded.
Oh, that would have sucked.
Yeah,
I wasn't doing it again.
I saved it, but it came back where only a piece was saved. But fortunately, when I shut down the backup computer, or as Eric called the crappy computer, I just did a shutdown and close all during the shutdown. And so when I reopened Audacity. It said, do you want to recover? And I was able to bring back the old one.
Well, that's good. Well, at least you saved what you recorded. That would
Yes. But oddly, it was still not saving correctly. And so what I did was I had to save it from, instead of a WAV file, as an MP3. And when I did that, it finally worked. And then
crazy.
And then I brought it over to my cloud and then re-brought it to one of the good computers and resaved it as a .wav file, and then I'm going to start editing it
and
as a .wav.
Sacrificed a goat and rolled some bones, and eventually we had the podcast.
Yeah, it was a disaster. Oh my God. And then, you know, $449 out the door. I got a really good computer on sale.
Okay.
Yeah, but it wasn't.
But that's why we need Patreon donations.
Yeah, it was definitely not an expense I was ever wanted to do. The only good thing is that I didn't have too much on that computer that crashed, so I didn't really lose much. And then the new one is a solid state drive, so it won't have a hard drive that will fail like that one did. So there's some drama there. We do have a few Facebook comments from some of our listeners. So I didn't. I just wrote them down here. They're pretty quick because they're from comments page. Just type stuff rather than emails. The first one was from Holly Masiak, and she's discussing the Devil's Advocate episode that we did, which was a Patreon winner that she actually chose. She's a donator to the Patreon account. We appreciate that. And when we did our randomizer, that was the film that came up. And she wrote, so am I a better parent than Phil because of all the horror memorabilia around the house and I don't run to turn off the TV if I'm interrupted during movie time? I guess I must have said that during the episode. I never did thank you for the great job you all did on the Devil's Advocate episode. You totally did it justice, and I knew Christy would have some amazing insights. Thanks, guys. So thank you, Holly.
Thank you. That's totally nice.
Yep. And then we have a couple from Dustin Watson of the Watsy podcast, so I can't screw that up with my boss.
Yeah, you can say that one.
Yes. Well, maybe not potty, but the rest of it. And the first thing he said, and I don't think we've read this one before, but I pulled it anyway. And he says, I loved your episode on the house that Jack built, guys. It was my number two of last year, and you fellas did it justice. Even Abe, who didn't seem to love it as much as Eric and Phil. This is the definition of a film that isn't for everyone, right? In fact, it's possible that it's really only for Von Trier himself. I know he sees himself in the character of Jack. Jack kills Lars makes films. Both are successful at what they do, at great cost, maybe. I wonder if von Trier feels some form of damnation applies to him in some strange, abstract way. That maybe filmmaking, meaning his art, will be his undoing. I don't know what I'm writing. It's been too busy of a day, and my brain is mush. Much love, homies. Good stuff. All right, thank you, Dustin. Then he has one about the Annabelle Comes Home episode, and he goes, DP crew, I'm damn happy you all liked Annabelle Comes Home as much as you did. I liked it quite a bit, although I was more with Abe on this one, that it was good, but not my favorite in the Wannaverse. I think that's what it's called. A much better name than Conjuringverse or whatever. It didn't touch either Conjuring film, in my opinion, nor the second Annabelle film for me, but it was so much better than The Nun. Anyway, Phil, thanks for the shout-out, and I really appreciate your observation about how I view films for podcasts. I do try to seek out any subtext I can when reviewing. When I'm not reviewing, though, I am dumb as shit. Still, man, your commentary on demons being envious of humans for their social interactions got me really thinking they would want that, wouldn't they? And Christy, your personal experiences with the Warrens is so cool. I've known who they were since I was an 11-year-old boy. Mike and Eric were great as usual. That on Scantsity, Eric has to keep things on the rails, but on DDP, he goes off the rails. White sauce pizza.
Oh, my God.
Sad that he got all tired and unresponsive by the end of the episode, despite all that white sauce pizza. But, hey, it is what it is, I guess. And, Phil, have you ever seen The Office? Just wondering. Very well. And you'll have to explain this white sauce pizza thing, Eric. I'm not familiar with this one.
That's a joke I made on the podcast. Perhaps you weren't there.
On the Scantsity podcast?
No, on this podcast.
Oh, okay. When I edited it, I must have missed it.
Yeah, I guess we all laughed pretty uproariously at it.
Yeah, it was kind of disgusting, too, as I recall.
Oh, I think I now remember this, yes.
I think you know where that's going with the white sauce.
The double stuffed.
We have one more from Dustin. This one's about the two Ranger episodes. And he goes, hey, DDP crew, I forgot to write in last week when I initially listened to the two episodes. But allow me to say here and now that both of your episodes on the Ranger were spectacular. First off, I really enjoyed the movie when my son and I watched it. And I was sincerely hoping you'd all see what I did in the film. And man, oh man, you all saw even more. So many astute observations and just a great analysis of the movie overall. Well done. I'm even more impressed with the interview you did with the Ranger himself. I admit that I'm not a fan of interview podcasts. Even when my good friends do it on other shows, I'm just not into it 90% of the time. But the questions you all asked were so spot on, and the Ranger's answers were just so damn intelligently handled. I don't know. I had a lot of fun with these shows. Good work, homies.
Thank you,
Dustin.
All right, so that's
So Dustin, let me answer the mystery to you about Eric being different on A Scantsity than he is on Dark Discussions, and this goes back to something I've repeated many times, and every time that we have I have to be on one of those how to do a podcast panels, which is that every podcast needs a fill. You need someone who does all the organization, who does all the work. And on Dark Discussions, the Phil is Phil. But on A Scantsity, the Phil is Eric.
That's right.
I want to be clear, however, if you're the Phil, you do not have to make references to The Office.
That's true. I actually dragged Eric into watching The Office way back earlier this year when I started watching.
Oh, no. See, I watched The Office when it first appeared on Netflix, like in the late 2000s. So you didn't drag me into anything. I had seen it before and I was willing. However,
just when you thought you were out, he
dragged you back in. It stopped and Phil kept going and going. And kind of like the Energizer Bunny.
Well, it's a couple of things. It's like, yeah, I was watching it. And then you said, I might as well rewatch that too, because Phil's watching it. And then you did. And we were doing our memes back and forth for a while. Yep. But yes, as both you and Mike have just said, yeah, I just kept on going. I guess this The Office this year is my Far Cry 5 from last year. Is basically
I guess so.
Yes. So, all right. So I think we are pretty set to go on tonight's episode. So, Eric, why don't you let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight?
All right. Tonight we are discussing a movie, I think it's still currently in theaters, directed by Alexander Aja, called Crawl.
The state of Florida has issued a Category 5 hurricane warning. All residents must evacuate immediately. Grab your families, your loved ones, and get out.
Dad!
We won't be able to come for you.
Dad!
Pipes blurs their senses.
I can distract them for you.
You got this!
You need to go now.
I'm not leaving you here!
That's right, Alexander Aja, an oddly hit or miss director, but he's done a couple of films that most horror fans at least like, and that would be such films as High Tension, Piranha 3D, and
The Hills Have Eyes remake.
I'm sorry?
The Hills Have Eyes remake.
Yeah, The Hills Have Eyes remake. And then he did a couple other
High
films.
High Tension.
I said that one, yeah. And then he did a couple other films that kind of bombed, which were The Mirrors, Hans, and The Ninth Life of Louis Drax.
The Ninth Life of Louis Drax, wasn't that his first film? I think it was
2016 it came out.
Oh, okay. No, then it's a different film I was thinking of. There was something he did in France before.
Yeah, Furia, it's called.
Okay. I mean, it all depends on what he's making the market for, what he's doing. And, like, I don't know, was Piranha 3D successful financially?
$25 million, 74% good reviews. I assume that it didn't cost that much to make, right? But
I don't know.
I have no idea.
I don't know, yeah. We'd have to look. I can bring that up right now. But there's something called... Or as Eric always says, I wish I had something in front of me that could give me all the answers.
It had a budget of $24 million and made $83.1 million for the box office.
Okay. Cool.
So that's right, a success. Worldwide.
Yeah, so that's good. So that was a success. And it was a good film, too. And we did an episode on it, as a matter of fact. Mike chose it as part of our, what was that month we did, Chrissy?
The Fish Fest.
Yeah, Fish Fest. That's it.
It sounded like he said Fist Fest.
That's a completely different kind of film
month.
Festival.
Different month.
Right. And
it
I was also...
It was Killer Fish Fest is what we
okay.
did.
Yeah, yeah. And when Mike answered instead of Chrissy, I was like a little confused. I go, that doesn't sound like a woman's voice, but maybe...
He's trying.
But, It's trying. All right. So this is called Crawl, 2019 film. Sam Raimi is the producer. The screenwriters are actually getting a lot of praise for this. They're brother combo Michael and Sean Rasmussen, Norwegian Americans, and they are also directors. They directed actually two well received horror films prior to this, even though I don't think anybody has ever seen them. And that was The Inhabitants and Dark Feed, which were from 2015 and 2012. They directed and co-wrote and co-directed those two films, and they both have gotten good reviews from such places as Dread Central and whatnot, and have positive reviews all around, even though I've never heard of either of those films until today. Also, The Ward, John Carpenter's last film that he directed, they were the screenwriters for that as well. So that is a pretty good, I guess, four films of note: Crawl, The Inhabitants, Dark Feed, and The Ward. I just had to hang up on the Bernie campaign. they just were calling me, and probably
God bless New Hampshire.
Yeah, we always get hammered by them. Let's see here. That's all I got there. The stars, there's basically two. Kaya Scodelario, who's a British actress. She was in that movie recently on Netflix called Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile. She played the woman that eventually marries Ted Bundy in that film. She was in The Maze Runner.
Okay.
Yeah, that was her. Yeah. She was in Maze Runner, the Maze Runner series. And she was pretty good in that series. I saw the first two of those films, and she was pretty good in them, and some various other things of note, but I haven't seen. And then Barry Pepper, first time I had ever seen him, was Saving Private Ryan, and since then he's done a lot of good.
Oh, I wonder if I feel familiar. He was a sniper, if I recall.
That is exactly right. And he was also in Green Mile, too. He played one of the guards in Green Mile.
That's where Roger, from.
Yeah, played Roger Maris in 61.
Maris!
Which is actually the place I tend to remember him from for some reason. I don't know why. Because the other two movies had come out before.
Yeah, that's a good point. So he's been in a lot of pretty good movies and has done a lot of good character work. And they are pretty much the two and only leads of the film. There's a handful of other characters, but this is a fairly what we've been calling on this podcast, maybe I'm the one that started it, but I'm sure everybody would agree with the statement, which is it's a bottle film, meaning it takes place generally in one area and only a handful of characters. So I guess we can go around and how we heard about this film and what we thought about it, and I'll start just to get that out of the way. When I was watching it, I honestly hated this film. But as I leave and go further and further away from the film and just look at it as a B-movie madness film, then it's a pretty good film. Because it has pretty much what anybody would want in a midnight movie. Animals attack, people getting ripped to shreds, suspense. Fear that the animal, meaning the dog, would get killed, scary atmosphere, and things of that nature. But having just watched this film right after watching Midsommar 2 days earlier, I went in and I was like, this movie completely sucks because the characters do stupid things, the injuries that occur are so unrealistic, and you could tell immediately everybody was red shirts except for the two leads, and even one of the two leads you figured may be a red shirt by the end of the film. But as the days have gone by, I would say it's a pretty decent film, and a lot of people are liking it, and I can see why, and I do not hate it as I had on my immediate watch. It's actually fairly good, again, as B-movie madness. Eric?
I heard about this movie on social media, I guess, to begin with. went to see it. When I was in the theater, there was this guy in the movie that kept on pulling out his phone and texting while the movie was playing. That wasn't my movie. That is whatever theater Phil was in. Because Phil kept on texting me while he was watching this movie to tell me how much it sucked. Shame, Phil. Shame. Shame. Ba-ding, ding, ding, ding. All right, I'm done. this is a movie that, if you take it seriously, like Phil did going into it, you're going to think it's awful. There's a lot of silly stuff that happens in this movie that I would call unrealistic. However, it is a fun ride. I had a good time during this movie. I particularly enjoyed the fact that at least the first two jump scares were not accompanied by musical stings, and that impressed me. Although I will say that during the last 20 minutes of the movie, I think I sprained my eyeballs from rolling them so hard. but it's a good time as long as you're not going to go into it taking it seriously. There's fun to be had here.
All right, very good.
I heard about it because it was one of those films that was kind of circulating in terms of upcoming flicks for this year. I went to see yesterday with my dad, a pretty modestly filled theater, and it was a lot of fun. It's definitely a B movie. I mean, and honestly, I went into there knowing it was going to be such a film. It's a good time. It's just like Jaws in the sense of it's just about a realistic depiction of alligators as Jaws was to sharks. A lot of the things are absolutely over the top. As some folks are saying, the injuries were just like gotten to the point where the unbelievable for someone to be still moving around after them or even be alive. There's a lot of questions about certain things that kind of leads to potholes. Looking away from that, if you're just kind of looking for a wild creature feature, this is really a good one. I think the performances were very strong, too. Nice atmosphere. I was a little mixed on the CGI usage of the alligators. I mean, I understand it can be a little more doable in the sense maybe. But I thought maybe some animatronics probably work could have added a little more. But that's okay. The pacing, too, was really solid. This movie is only about an hour and 27 minutes. It's not a long film, and I think that really helps it a lot. It allowed the pacing to be very tighter and a lot more just a lot more solid. I think that really helps it a lot. If it was any longer than that, I think I could have taken the adrenaline and the flow away from it. Overall, I really liked it. I think it's not in terms of overall like storytelling quality, but just sheer fun. I think it's one of my favorite films of the year for that reason.
Okay, let's go with Chrissy.
This was big dumb fun. Nathan and I had a total blast. I had first heard about this film on social media, as Eric did. And Nathan and I both agreed that the last time we had this much stupid fun at a movie was when we saw 47 Meters Down. But that this was way better than that. We kind of looked at this as a cross between 47 Meters Down and The Shallows. We both felt that it sort of pulled what we liked about both films, the best attributes from both. Me personally, I am not a fan of jump scares in regular horror or supernatural movies, but in killer animal, creature, or fish movies, I want jump scares out the ass because for me, that is fun. That is what it's about.
So uncomfortable sounding.
Yes, totally. All right, we're not going to have another white pizza sauce repeat. But anyway, I saw this with a fantastic audience. This audience, and that, it made it even more fun. It was the theater, probably, there was probably 50 or 60 people in there. It was $6 Tuesday, so, you know, everybody was there seeing it. Everyone was engaged. There was screaming. There was laughing. After they jump out of their skins, they'd all be like, oh my God, I can't believe I freaked out. At the end of the movie, like, at least three people were like, oh my God, wow, that was so good, or that was so much fun, I had such a good time. We did have one guy who unfortunately was two seats down from us, and he was just like Mr. Disgruntled. He was, every time the audience laughed, every time they screamed, he'd look around like angry. And we were just kind of like, all right, why are you even here? Like, you could have just done this at home and been a nasty ass all by yourself. But other than that, it was everyone had a great time. I loved the pacing. I thought the acting was great. I think the creature effects were awesome. The hurricane effects, as I was really impressed with. I know that they're all CGI, but we have technology now that can make this stuff look super real, and I really enjoyed that. I loved the sparing but effective backstory setup. It was really done correctly, which I'll talk about later. I will buy this, and this will be one of those movies I leave on in the background when I'm doing stuff. I loved the atmosphere. Like, I could feel Florida in it. I also think, as a couple of you've said, the writing was just so tight. This was the perfect amount of time for this type of film, because it literally screwed you up and then held you there for the whole hour and 20 minutes, pretty much. I do recognize that there were completely unrealistic things in this. And Nathan knows more than I do, but we both know a lot about alligators because I used to talk about them at the aquarium. So I'm going to share some of that stuff with the listeners later, but it's not going to be, okay, this was unrealistic. It's going to be, here's what really would have been like. In Hollywood, they kind of have to overdo it to make it a film, and that's fine. When I go to see a creature feature about a giant anything, a giant shark, a giant alligator, a giant crocodile, like in Lake Placid, I don't expect them to be realistic. You can't, because there would be no movie. So I go to these for the thrills, and this one really delivered. I think easily this is going to be in one of my top 10 this year, if we consider it a horror film, because it was just fun. And Phil had the opposite experience. I needed mind candy after having watched Midsommar. I really just needed to go watch something completely stupid. And this delivered. It was great. So that's my thoughts.
All right. Very good. To give a break to the guy that was a downer at the film, he didn't know what he probably thought he was going to see a different film, and so he was kind of disappointed. What are you going to do? It happens. So we can't rip him that bad, Chrissy. We can't rip him that bad. Last but not least, the man of the hour, the man that loves the animal attack films, the man that loves the animals eating people films, Mr. Mike.
I first heard about this when we did our 2019 preview, and I was looking for films, and I clicked on a thing called Crawl. I was like, oh shit, Alexander Aja. Oh shit, Killer Crocodile movie. Oh shit, it's going to be in theaters. And so I made sure to mention that in our preview episode. I've been looking forward to it kind of ever since. I'm kind of lukewarm on the film as killer alligator films go. Killer alligator films tend to be really awesome, or they tend to be really, really shitty. And I think this is on the lower end of the awesome scale. It's kind of like in the middle of the pack. It's just good enough to not be absolutely shit, because that's pretty much the tipping point for alligator films. I just had a weird vibe because they seem to be taking the human drama kind of seriously. And they didn't take the alligators seriously at all. So it felt kind of like they did the the people stuff from the shallows with the shark stuff from Deep Blue Sea, and you put those together, and it just felt like a weird combination of a taste to me. I saw this on the preview night on Thursday night, because we weren't recording, so I went out to see it there. And yeah, little things like, because they were playing it straight, and then the alligators were so not alligator-y, that was a little off-putting to me. Again, like, I don't mind that the piranhas in Piranha 3D weren't piranha-y, because that was clearly an over-the-top film from the start. So maybe that put me on a bit of a wrong footing. I have a feeling I know why Phil was having trouble with the film, and we'll talk about that later. I don't think it has anything to do with Midsommar. But we'll see. I'll test my hypothesis later. But it is a fun film. I enjoyed it. I certainly enjoyed it a lot more by the time we got to the end. It's a little weird seeing Barry Pepper as the dad of a college girl. There's certainly something they didn't bother mentioning at the end of the movie. The injuries were kind of like making me roll my eyes a bit. But, you know, I saw somebody asking, why is it that Meg, you know, which came out about the same time last year, why did Meg do so well and this didn't do that well? Though it'll probably make its money back. It'll be a solid single or double for Paramount. And I think the answer is kind of obvious, is that the Meg was, you know, intended to be a big budget picture, you know, and this is
It also had Dwight from The Office.
Well, more relevantly, it had Jason Statham.
Right. And a shitload of Chinese money. Whereas this is clearly a 70s drive-in kind of film, right? So it is, for that, I think it's a fun film, and it's certainly worth checking out. So, yeah, I'll give it a recommend. Certainly, if you're into cheesy alligators killing people movie, I guess if there's really things that they don't kill anybody that we really care about, I don't think.
Right.
Everybody's a red shirt. There are questions about the three leads and which of them will make it. And
I don't know, man. I had a real emotional connection to that dude in the gas station.
Yeah.
He's one of his hot dogs.
All right. I think I already know what Mike meant with three leads, and
yeah,
it's not Midsommar. Okay, I see what you're saying, Mike. I see what you're saying. You're probably right. That's a good point. Anyway, continue.
So, I give it a watch. I don't know. Like I said, it's fun. It's a fun film. I don't think it's great. I think I'm very hot and cold with Alexander Aja. I love most of High Tension. I love The Hills Have Eyes remake. I love Piranha 3D. But I really didn't like Horns. Mirrors kind of left me meh. So, you know, this is going to be somewhere, like, again, even there, I put it in the middle of his pack of the films of his. I like it the middlest of all of his movies.
He did write P2, and that was pretty good. I'll give him that.
He wrote that one?
Yeah.
Okay, that is a good film. That is a nice unsung Christmas horror film.
Yep, absolutely. Oh, there we go. There's our Christmas horror film for this year.
Ooh. Dun, dun, dun.
yeah, it'll be better than last year's, that's for sure.
what was last year's? Was that the Dee Wallace movie?
The Dee Wallace one, yeah.
Mm, yeah.
The Red Abortion, or whatever it was called?
Yeah. Mike, I do have a question for you, Mike. I saw that you saw Toby Hooper's Eaten Alive film. How was that one?
That's weird.
I know it. Yeah, it's very
really weird film. If you've seen, obviously this, I think this was his first film after Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I believe you're right. Yes.
So one of the things that threw me off at first is the fact that this is, everything here is on a set, on a soundstage, so they can have a swimming pool in it. It is not really a killer gator movie, or a killer crocodile movie, even though there's a killer crocodile in the film. You know, it's sort of like, you know, The Spy Who Loved Me isn't a killer shark film, even though there is a killer shark in the film, because you have a crazy madman who's just basically got a pet alligator and kind of feeds people to the alligator. So it's not like a rogue alligator kind of movie. But there's an artificiality because it's all on a set. And it's got, you know, the colors are very vibrant, is I guess the way I'll do it. So it tonally, it is very different feel to visually tone from the realistic feeling of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But then imagine Texas Chainsaw, like the final act of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like the dinner scene. Imagine everybody in the film acts that way except one little girl. Like, it feels like everybody got drugged before they filmed their scenes, because everyone's way over the top. That's kind of that. You have maybe the first major role for Robert Englund, who is this sort of rapey townie that's in it. You've got Carolyn Adams, from the Adams Family, who played Morticia in this, playing I think it's Hattie, who is the madam at the brothel. But she seems to be wearing old age makeup, and I don't quite understand why, because it's not like they're trying to hide that it's Carolyn Adams, because her name is right there in the credits. So it's just a strange, strange film. You can watch it on Amazon Prime. I still honestly don't quite know what I think of it. It's just bizarre. So I would give it a recommend. It's very cheesy. It's very over the top. It's very weird. It's probably closer to, say, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 than Texas Chainsaw Massacre in that regard. But if you're looking for more Killer Croc films, that's one to put on the list. There are others out there to watch, but they're kind of hard to find right now. So it's a thing you can do.
All right, very good. So now, Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki. Oh, shoot, I lost my tab. Okay, here it is. All right. A young woman, while attempting to save her father during a Category 5 hurricane, finds herself trapped in a flooding house and must fight for her life against alligators.
Pretty much, yeah.
All right, that sounds good, yeah. Works
accurate.
For me. Yep. All right. Before we get into spoilers, we'll just discuss some general things and stuff. First thing I did was text Chrissy after I left the film. I said, it's very weird to know that Barry Pepper can be the father of the lead actress in this film. It makes us all old.
Yes, we are all ancient, except for Abe. He's still a baby.
Yeah, true.
I'm still youthful and beautiful.
He's Barry Pepper's baby.
He could be. That's how depressing all this is. Yes. So that was definitely hurtful.
But seriously, and, Abe, I do think I'm old enough to be your mom.
Yeah.
Like, I do think I am old enough to be your mom.
How old are you, Abe?
I'm 28.
Yeah.
Oh. All right. Technically speaking, we're all old enough to be his parent.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean,
well, and that's the thing, is that when me and Abe and his mother met during the writers group in Nashua way back, when me and Abe headed out to Anthocom, and then me and Abe headed down to meet you guys in Mystic, I knew I didn't have to worry about his mother thinking I'm some like pervert picking up her son, and you know, as this 40 something year old picking up her 20 something year old in college, like, you know, so I felt a little good, a little better about that.
Mm.
But if I didn't know Abe's mother prior to this, that would have not been good.
I don't know. I think you're worrying a little too much, Phil. I think you're worrying a little too much.
Yeah, well, you're probably
only because of all the restraining orders.
Yeah. And plus, I feel depressed that Barry Pepper can play the father of this woman in the movie.
No, next time we go anywhere, I'm going to go pick Abe up and watch his mother really freak out and just be like, yeah, I'm a cougar. Did you know?
Well, Abe, actually, Chrissy, Abe's mommy going, excellent, Abe. You got yourself a girlfriend. Good job.
Oh, dear.
We'll just sit there. We'll have hanging up behind us will be a gimp suit. Just.
I guess here's our white pizza sauce joke.
Oh, boy.
Hey, we're going to force you to dress in like a bathing suit down in Mystic, and we're going to put you in like one of our hotel rooms, and we'll just start taking pictures and send it to your mother.
No. This is going so badly.
Anyway,
oh my god, I am so in. I am so in. Let's do that.
I'll be awesome. So nowhere in the vicinity.
No way.
I'll deal with the police.
No. Gotta call the FBI now.
Just state police. All right, so anything else besides Barry Pepper being so old that he could be Abe's father?
I did not realize that the lead actress was English, so that's cool.
Sometimes the accent kind of slipped down certain lines, I noticed.
I did not.
I know somebody who complained about the accent, but as I think I've mentioned on this podcast many, many times, I have a dead ear for picking up bad accents.
Yeah, me too. I've been listening to a podcast about Lost, and I keep on talking about the awful Australian accents on that show. I'm like, I can't tell.
I've often talked about how my acting idol is William Shatner, so sometimes I don't always pick up a bad performance. Well, I learned everything I ever did about accents by listening to Mel Blanc and The Muppet Show. So, yeah, take that for what you will.
She's also, her mother's actually from Brazil, and so she has learned Portuguese as well, very fluently, so good for her. But yes, yeah, she has a very thick English accent in regular interviews, so like you said, it slipped out just a bit here or there as the film was going. Mm-hmm. I felt too, Mike. So I'm not. I guess you're not the only one that noticed that. And you said other people on Facebook or wherever said it too, Mike.
One person I know of on Facebook said it. But again, this is not a film that you go to for authentic,
right?
Florida accents
or alligators either.
Right, right. So this was as Mike, you said, summed it up perfectly. This was a drive-in movie for the 70s type film and what I said, B-movie madness, so things like that shouldn't matter.
And I was also very disappointed that the little dog survived the movie, because it should have been a
spoiler warning
the first 15 minutes.
First of all, I have a feeling that this is because Phil may have been texting you throughout the entire film. Phil texted me once threatening to revolt if the dog died in the movie.
Yes.
And I had already seen it at that point, because, again, I saw it the preview Thursday night, and I was not about to let him off the hook. But I did, while watching the film, I came to the realization that within horror films, right, I want to make it clear this is only for horror films, so stuff like Old Yeller doesn't count. If the dog is not, like, the first or second kill, if he is not killed before any significant human beings, he is going to make it throughout the movie.
I think bullshit, because really, dogs should have gone before the sheriff. I mean, come on.
I agree. I agree that dogs should have died probably on numerous occasions. The dog, like, was really good at being concerned for his owner and yet not going to look for his owner, because that would have gotten him eaten about 38 times.
I mean, the dog was also making a lot of noise, too, that should have attracted the alligators come crawling up for it.
Yep.
You know,
that dog would have ripped those alligators apart. That was a monster.
Little dogs love dark discussions. This is why. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of what Nathan said, too. He was sort of like, once the dog did not get eaten in the first 20 minutes, I knew it was going to be fine.
Right.
And then it was going to make it to the end.
I'm not arguing about that. I just, it should have been a snack.
That would have been terrible. Just like in Zombievers.
No, that was hilarious.
That was awesome, even though it was depressing. The little dog survived in Meg last year, so that was good.
Character.
I mean, while we're talking about the opening here, I just want... did we give a spoil warning?
No.
We already spoiled it by saying the dog lives, but there's whole websites dedicated to that, because some people will not go see movies where dogs die, or they'll just, for some irrational reason, decide to hate a movie because the dog died.
Good thing we don't. Right.
I actually posted one of those website articles on Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, and I also instant messaged Sean Fox to let him know, because he would not see the film either if the dog got killed. So.
A bunch of pussies.
Now, one thing that stood out is was one thing I mentioned to my father at the end of the film was the characters, even if their bite wounds were not as bad as they got towards the end, they should have lost a lot more blood than they did because because they the fact that they spent so much time in the water, which is, you know, anti-clogging agent. You know, like you get cut and you try to wash it, it's going to keep bleeding because it's not allowed to clog up and close. And they're soaking in water with these giant puncture wounds and stuff like that. I'm thinking, like, these people should be fucking drained at this point. Especially you know, that was just one.
But no, Abe, you're right on there. But also, if an alligator that size, especially the first time he grabbed her leg and he was thrashing her back and forth, it would have been either completely broken, ripped right out of her hip, or
dislocated.
Her at the very least would have been dislocated. No, but I mean, honestly, a gator that size, if it existed and if it did that, her leg would have just been ripped right off her body.
Yeah,
there's no two ways about
that. The level of damage depicted
really
in this film
was not
realistic at all. And not even a gator that big, even a gator like 75% that size gets a hold of you, you're just done. You're done.
And, you know, it's very fact too. There's one moment where she actually gets caught and forced into a death roll. I was thinking like,
that was bullshit.
That was bullshit right there. That should be game over right there. Or the dasher die of complete shock after his arm got pulled right off.
One thing the film doesn't mention, so one of the things in the film is that this girl, she's at college, she's a swimmer, a competitive swimmer at college, she's there on a scholarship, and she's concerned because she's troubled by stuff that she's going to lose her scholarship, swimming scholarship. Well, one of the things that the film doesn't bother to mention at the end, she is totally losing that swimming scholarship.
Oh, yeah. Well, and also, Chrissy, you seem to actually know something about alligators, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that, like, even Michael Phelps could not outswim an alligator. Am I right about that?
Probably not.
Yeah, no, you are pretty right about that. And in fact, alligators, this is one of the problems that they have down in Disney World and these other areas. They actually can move pretty quickly on land as well, as long as they're moving in a straight line. So if they're in pursuit of something, they're pretty, you know, they can be pretty fast and they can overtake you pretty easily, particularly if you're running on sand. Now, when they're in the water, they're even faster.
So if Rickon Stark had run into an alligator on land, he would have been toast.
Pretty much. Okay. And, you know, the other interesting thing here is that although they did try to justify, the father tells her the story about how she went in the pool when she was a kid and she kept holding her breath and holding her breath to see how long she could hold it. As my husband pointed out, I mean, this girl held her breath longer than most freaking Navy SEALs. Now, I mean, it was just like, I don't know anybody that could hold her breath that long. So,
especially
back, with adrenaline and all that stuff going, it'd be a little tough.
Way back in the day, I used to be able to hold my breath a long time, to quote Creepshow, because I did scuba diving and skin diving when I was in high school. And so when I was watching a movie like this, I would hold my breath because I was just sitting there. And I thought, if me just sitting there can hold my breath as long as the characters on screen can hold their breath, then it's not total bullshit. You know, obviously a character running, jumping, swimming, whatever, while they hold their breath is a somewhat different matter. I don't know that but I'm no longer near the shape I was. I still can hold my breath a decent amount of time, but not nearly as well. She's a swimmer. You know, she's going to be able to hold her breath for a good long time, but I really wish I could have, like, timed how long she was there. It didn't seem completely implausible, like it is in a lot of films, but it was definitely on the upper end. But again, athlete, swimmer, she could probably do it for much better than we could.
Well, yeah,
Go
ahead, Abe.
Oh, I was also kind of figuring out, too, is that thinking, too, is the another thing I had mentioned, was talking to my dad about, was like when the father takes out one of the gators of a shovel, he doesn't bash his head in, he cuts it almost like decapitates it. I'm thinking, you can't really fucking do that to a shovel. I know a gator's skin is not like dragon scales or any shit like that, but I don't think it's the edge is sharp enough to do something like that, unless I'm completely fucking wrong.
Well, and you know, I mean, this is just fun talking about all this unrealistic stuff, because this is part of what the fun of this movie was for me, and I know for my husband too. It almost made it fun to just sit there and be like, oh my God, yeah, no, that's not gonna, like, Nathan was like, I kind of laughed because I said to him, why does everybody in these movies always know how to do a tourniquet?
And Nathan
was like, I think they should just rename this movie Tourniquet, because there were so damn many. It was like every time he turned around, it's like, oh, let's do another tourniquet on this, and let's do another tourniquet on that.
Add that to the crawl drinking game.
Oh, yeah.
This would be an awesome drinking game.
I agree.
It really would. This would be great. But, I mean, I do think, despite some of the unrealistic things, I mean, there were just so many. If you want to get into alligator biology, too, you know, it was full of like alligator bullshit, basically.
Yes.
And I'm going to consider this more sharing trivia, rather than criticizing the film, because it's, you know, whatever. It's a fun drive-in 70s style kind of thing. And so it doesn't really matter. It's one of the hallmarks of the genre, but we see a sign at the beginning that says Alligator Farm that she drives by.
Oh, yeah, yep.
And, right. And Nathan had pointed out that that's so that we can assume that maybe some of these animals might have come from there, in case someone had complained there were too many, or assumed they got out because of the, you know, so they could assume they got out because of the storm. But the reality is that the animal's spikes were far too sharp. And I'm pretty sure that most of this was CGI. So that means that if they intended these alligators to come from an alligator farm, they either screwed up and didn't do their homework, or these alligator farm sign had nothing to do with anything. When you have alligators living in a farm, their spikes on their backs tend to get dull because they're crawling all over each other all the time. So they get worn down. The ones in the wild you'll see are spiked. And this is kind of fun, because if you go back and watch some of the older films that have killer alligators in them, or alligators in them of any kind, pre-CGI, look at the spikes on the back. Because pre-CGI, what these film companies would do would be to go to an alligator farm, or get footage from an alligator farm, and you can tell the difference. So the next time you see an older movie with alligators in it, try to look at the spikes on their backs, if you know the film has more practical effects, and you'll probably see that the spikes are sort of dull, because they got them from alligator farms. Because in alligator farms, the alligators are used to kind of being together in the same space. And they're just used to, and they're much more docile, because they also get fed on a regular basis, so they don't necessarily have to hunt. Alligators in general, females and males generally do not hang out together. So in her basement, that would supposed to have been, I guess, two alpha males. And that really would not have worked, because Nathan was pointing out that there's usually only one alpha male around. Like, he will eliminate and get rid of the others. And then Nathan said he was confused because the ones outside were all the same size. So he was like, okay, well, is this supposed to be like, I don't get it. Like, what is this family grouping of alligators? And again, this is all just nitpicky, stupid crap nobody would notice or care about, but I thought you guys would find it interesting.
Okay. Yeah, I like the bit about the spikes, but yeah, it's the thing I always laugh at with this, and it's typical of any nature attacks film, is that these are animals that never get sated. You know, they eat about a half dozen people, and they're still ready to eat more. You know, one person would satisfy an alligator for probably a year.
Oh, yeah. Well, they kill about five people by the end of this film. There's even a point there where they kill one of the cops, and the main character discovers the body in the frickin' lair, just not even eaten, just chewed up. It's like, You honestly think they just kill and I eat it or anything like that?
Well, no.
Save it for later.
That's the other thing. That's what they do. They alligators will typically, they will attack and eat something, and then they will store it. And the movie kind of did get that right.
Well,
the space where they were, the egg part was kind of bullshit, and I'll explain why in a minute. But she goes and finds the body there. Alligators will typically find spots and hide their food there, because what they will do is drown the live food and then stuff it under a log so that it, or something, or put it in their little hidey hole or do whatever, so that it will get soft and rotted. Well, and I think that's what happened to that child that they killed that in Disney.
Oh.
I think the reason they couldn't find the kid, I think, I would have to go look it up, but I seem to remember, was because the kid had been stuffed under like a log or a rock or in like an outcropping or something, because the alligator had drowned the child and then stored it for later. Because that's what they do. They have to wait for it to rot because it's easier.
For those playing at home, Christy mentioned Disney. Take a drink.
Yeah.
But
the thing I was pointing out there is that those two alligators were in the cells almost the entire time. The ones that ate the people earlier, the looters, were outside. So I was wondering why they wouldn't just
if I could just mention one thing first, Eric, which is, don't forget there was alligator nests as well. So I was gonna say
there were more than two alligators in this movie.
Well, yeah. The nests were also kind of a problem, just trivia wise, because alligators, first of all, they always cover their eggs. And yes, it's true that there was already flooding, but the eggs are usually buried in mounds of dirt, and that's how the sex is determined. And if the eggs are colder, the babies will be female. And if it's warmer, the babies will be male. So they're exactly like sea turtles or whatever. It's the same deal. But alligator nests do need sunlight of some sort. So that place that they chose to put their nest, which was like in sort of like outside his crawl space, but like under something, that really didn't make any sense because it does need sunlight.
So pretty much, other than the general shape, this movie got everything wrong about alligators.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
One thing I'll say about the nest is that when we talk about animals for, like, I don't know, your latest David Attenborough documentary from the BBC, we talk about the typical animal. Animals do all sorts of fucked up things they're not supposed to because something's wrong genetically with them. Their instincts are off. So this could be just a dumbass alligator that laid its eggs where it doesn't belong. So I'm willing to kind of throw that aside because, I mean, and they also don't tend to guard their nests quite the way that they were implying, but that could just be the way the audience is interpreting it or the way they want the audience to interpret it rather than reality.
They usually just bury them and go. Yeah. That was my understanding of it.
And they stay in the area, but when the eggs hatch, they will call to the mom and the mom will come and take them to the water
usually the babies have to ride on them so they can learn how to swim and stuff.
Yeah, but they don't like sit on it and watch it. They just wait for
no,
song. I was kind of hoping, because I'm that kind of a sick bastard, when he grabs her, or the one gator grabs her arm towards the end of the film and does the death roll, I was kind of hoping he would rip the arm off.
It should have, honestly.
Well, it should have. And it would have been, instead of the dad losing his arm, it kind of, spoiler warning, it would have been kind of cool if it had been her, right? Given all this, everything they'd been through, you know, the idea that she sacrificed something like that for her father would be kind of neat. And I always have to give credit. I don't know if any of you have ever seen How to Train a Dragon or How to Train a Dragon. Right, I always have to give them a tremendous credit because the lead character loses his leg in the film for a kids movie, you know, and that's ballsy. Period.
His leg, but Toothless, the dragon, loses part of his wing, and they both become handicapped. But they use a technology to work together to make up for that, and that was really something very daring and very brave to, you know, approach it for a kids film.
Well, it's daring and brave to do that in an adult film because you never mutilate your leaf.
in this movie. I think, well, not only was it the fact that, I'm sorry, but if an alligator gets you in a death roll, you're just done. Because that's what it's for.
Maybe he was just a lazy alligator.
Well, and there's like also never... the fact that, let's not forget that this woman had already had, I think, the same arm.
Yes.
Already bitten by an alligator.
So she had her leg bitten and the same arm twice.
Yeah.
Right? That arm, she is not going into competitive swimming again for the rest of her college career.
She's done as a swimmer.
No. And honestly, you know, she shouldn't even have that much energy because we talked about, her bones should be fucking broken. She should be able to swim as well as she did at the finale.
Well, it uses a video game logic, right? Where you're playing a game like Halo or something and your meter gradually rebuilds as you walk around.
Yeah, that's actually a really good analogy, Mike, because the dad got better, too.
Yeah, the dad was like...
Didn't he have a compound fracture of the leg?
Yeah. And then
pops it back in and
starts limping around.
Yeah, it was a compound fracture.
By the end, he's picking up a medium-sized dog and wading through water and carrying the medium-sized dog with no problem whatsoever.
Right?
The newbie replaced... Prometheus.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, that was a very well-behaved dog who just like, okay, you're going to carry me through the raging waters? I'll just sit here.
Yeah, that's a very fine dog.
I was willing to roll with the bullshit for a certain amount of this movie and be like, okay, well, this is just dumb fun. It's fine. But when they started playing tiptoe through the alligators, I'm like, what the fuck are these people doing?
Because suddenly they're the worms from Tremors. Don't make any noise.
Eric, that was when I was bad and I texted you saying, this movie's the worst fucking film I've ever seen.
Pay off on that for me is I just lost my shit and started laughing my ass off when they got washed all the way back into the house.
Oh my god, me too. Well, I think it was Jurassic Park. Well, we're back in the castle.
That was the thing. Is the reason I flipped out and I sent that text to Eric when I shouldn't, because you don't do that when you're in the theater, but I did it anyway, was because once you get out of the crawl space and you finally escape the alligators that had you trapped there, you
go upstairs.
Upstairs. Wait the fucking storm out.
Right.
You don't walk through an alligator batch to a boat that has already been damaged because she saw the people that had that boat get ripped to shreds.
Through the alligator.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And there are little things like, for example, she sees the looters across the way raiding the convenience store or the gas station.
Yeah.
And she grabs a flashlight and signals them with the flashlight. And then when the emergency rescue workers come through, she suddenly forgets she has the flashlight.
Not only that, but there's also, remember the moment that there's a second exit way that the father told her about that she can go through to get out. And so but when the cop gets in the house, she forgets about it completely. So when she tried to get their attention, they're trying to shout from the basement itself. Rather, she could have went back to the little hatchway and opened it up partway and called through there so he could have pushed the furniture out of the way and pulled her up.
Right. That useless fucking dog should have brought the cop over there, too.
Oh, yeah, the dog knew exactly where they were. Or they were scratching the spot, but they didn't know where the fuck they were earlier.
Right, but dog, dog's a dog, animal. But you're absolutely right. She could have had them just go to the hatch and pop the hatch. Mm. That's it.
Also, the second cop was such an idiot just to walk away from his post just because of a swing.
Right.
And that was
so stupid.
What's that swing doing? It's supposed to be swinging. Why is it not swinging?
Yeah, I hate when people just say something is a dumb film because a lot of times, films are silly. Or nonsensical in a way that's deliberate, or they cheat in ways. This was just one of the dumbest screenplays I've seen in a long time. In terms of, just nothing
how people acted.
And even you know, internal consistency, right? Like, well, people called Zombievers a dumb film. I thought that was a clever film that was about something silly and stupid. That's a different thing. We're here, you know, these are relatively smart people who are doing really stupid things that, again, weren't consistent with things that were established earlier in the film. You know, the alligators, as we said, are just completely... They are giving alligators such a bad name. you talk about Jaws. Jaws was actually kind of decent as a shark film until the final act, right, where he starts pulling the barrels underwater. Right, within up to that point, he was doing kind of sharky stuff. There have been sharks that have gone rogue. Then it went kind of way on the far end. Sort of.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but
the alligators are just so not alligatory at all.
But here's the thing. We've been pissing all over this movie for a while now. I do want to point out a couple things I really enjoyed about this movie.
Me too, yeah.
I don't want this to be a total bitch fest, because I actually had a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I would generally recommend it if you're looking for a fun, dumb movie. But at the beginning of the movie, I will say that they got me when the second alligator showed up. I did not see that coming.
My dad jumped out of his fucking seat when that happened. I mean,
yeah, they got me good with that.
So it's genetic.
Burn on Abe.
Sorry.
You're never going to live that one down, buddy. Sorry.
Right. Well, and to be honest, Eric, that was before the movie... became quote unquote stupid. In other words, up to that point, it was still fairly realistic, kind of. At least I felt that way.
Right, and there was a chance to do this as a, if they had wanted to do this as a genuine survival horror film, because you could see a situation like this perhaps happening where someone is stuck in their basement with a large in their crawl space with a large alligator.
Well,
what do you do?
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's
I also like the bit where the dad survived because he crawled back through the pipes where the alligator couldn't fit.
Yeah.
I thought that, at least in the one place in the basement, was a pretty good, clever setup.
Another thing I really liked was also just the smart way he actually used the very weak foundation of the house to trap one of the alligators.
That was also pretty clever.
Yep. I honestly thought maybe if they'd done it more as a way to outsmart the animals, it would have been a little more grounded. But it just kind of started getting towards similar to how the shark and Jaws is handled. Instead of they became more like super animals rather than actual grounded creatures.
Yes.
Well, yeah. And there were also a couple of nice things that I really appreciated. There were a couple of homages to Jaws specifically that were really, really sweet. Like, for example...
The camera point of view.
The camera doing the POV, but what was so interesting about that was that, you know, in Jaws, we're used to the camera POV, and it's very just... And it's like, oh, okay, we see some fish, and we see some sand or whatever. This was cool... because it was completely disorienting, because instead of seeing the typical ocean shit we always see, we're seeing like the bottom half of a car, you know, palm trees. Oh, here's a totally submerged fire hydrant, road signs. Like, it was just really cool. Like, I thought, this is really cool. It's like, I don't know.
Like,
there was
true
just something
flood.
Very...
Yeah.
It was very disorienting, and I liked it. And I loved how the female looter got eaten, and she was totally taken in the same manner that Quint was.
Yeah, right, she's right.
Sitting there screaming, kicking her legs at it and everything. The shots were even almost the same, except they were reversed. But
I also liked how her compatriot there didn't even notice it was happening. Because
oh, yeah, that was
so
hilarious.
I was going to say the positive for me was even though you knew all the red shirts were red shirts, their kill scenes were pretty good. And Chris, you just brought the one up, the things I was going to bring up, which is it was kind of cool how she's getting taken out in the boat because the croc or alligator, I should say, jumps into the boat and takes her out. And her friend, who's looking at the flashes from our lead actress, knowing that someone's in the basement, he can't even hear her getting killed in her screams because the storm is so loud that he can't even hear it. And when he turns around, he sees what happens. And then there's the other kid in the store. And see, and this was one of the one unfortunate part of that scene was he couldn't hear his friend, the girl, getting ripped to shreds right behind him.
And he couldn't hear the get out of the water either.
But the guy in the store didn't hear it either, but he could hear his friends saying, don't come out, get on, get out of the water. If both of them couldn't hear the girl getting killed, they wouldn't have been able to hear each other screaming back and forth, to communicate.
Well, I often have trouble at the end of the year, and you guys do your best kill, your best funny moment, your best whatever. I always suck at those lists, and that's why I usually don't participate in them. But I've got to tell you, I'm going to try to make a mental note to remember. I honestly think it's going to be tough to unseat the kills in this movie for me because they were so over the top. And like the looter, honestly, I was completely surprised by. I wasn't expecting I was expecting the guy in the water to get taken out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When he was, I was not expecting the chick in the boat. So I was like, oh my God, like what the fuck?
Also, I understand we've acknowledged that this movie is not based in reality, but just one more thing. ATM machines are intentionally made heavy as fuck so that people can't carry them away.
Yeah.
I'm fairly certain that two people could not pick up an ATM.
And that boat would not be able to hold it either.
Right. Absolutely. Or once it got on the boat, it would just sink it.
And, while I was watching that, I couldn't help think back to Breaking Bad. With the meth family.
Oh, that's one of the most brutal things ever put on television.
But, yeah, I mean, I'll get that they're too stupid to realize you're not going to get into that either. You need serious power tools to get into the money in there. But people are that stupid. I could see that. But yeah, that's one of those things that it's fun. So
yeah, one thing that was also really cool was the uses of sound. Like every time the alligators clapped their teeth or the storm roared, there's a very powerful presence of the sound. Make every impact, every crash, every bite feel very visceral.
Yeah, the sound design was really excellent.
Yeah, like the very first time
Hello?
Abe?
We lost you.
Abe?
We lost Abe.
Did we lose
him? An alligator got him!
Oh, yeah, no. Phil, you need to put in like splashing effects there.
That would be so funny. All right.
There he is. He's back. Go on.
How's the arm?
Headphones just went off on me.
We thought the gator got you.
So there continue. We go. Fix it. As I was saying, for example, the very first time the alligator chomped down on our main character, it was just that loud clap, like almost like thunder, almost like lightning too. It gave the creatures a very powerful presence on the screen. Even though they're all CGI, it just uses their hissing and growling just really made them feel a lot more menacing, even if they were more monster than animal. And I love the quiet moments too of when they were in the eye of the storm. That nice still silence that kind of breaks up the whole storm and everything like that. It was just kind of a nice little eerie thing too.
I would agree.
Yeah, I
know. It's just a little thing there. It's just
I still think we're just shocked that you came back. We really thought you were taken out by alligators, dude.
No. The alligator suicide who it was let me go.
Right, well, the way these people escaped the alligators after being death rolled, bitten 4 or 5 times each, I think you could have took them to Abe.
Here in Massachusetts, alligator. It's getting by us.
I really wanted to mention too as something else that there's a couple things I really liked about this movie that I thought were actually done really well. I really wanted to talk about the set.
Oh yeah.
The house in particular. First of all, I think there's a group of people that really never gets recognized in Hollywood. And those are the people who actually design and dress these sets. I think in this particular film, I was just very impressed with this home that was clearly crammed with remnants of a happier life, but it had all kind of, you know, sort of fallen apart over the years. The house had gotten dilapidated. We also see like Haley's growth marks on the wall. We see that the swings are kind of gross and falling apart. There's a mildewed and dartboard on the floor. Everything just looked very lived in and like very abandoned. And it was yellowed and distressed and sort of dank looking. And it suggested that time had passed this part of their lives by and was gone forever. And what was interesting was that most of those things, I mean, like the wing and the height marks, they do appear later in the movie. They do play a small role. But then we get down into the crawl space. We see the dead raccoon. There's the sticky, nasty Florida mud. I mean, all of this just gave this film such a sense of strong, it's not even atmosphere, it's more like place.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the color of the water, like you knew you were in Florida. You knew you were in a home that had been kind of mildew and moisture ravaged from all the years of being down there and not cared for. It was just really well done.
And I will say that initial the initial setup where she's trying to find her dad at the house was really well done.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you at the audience, having seen the poster for this movie, know what the deal is, but she doesn't. And I thought the actress did a pretty good job of portraying someone trying to figure it out and then finally realizing too late what's going on.
Yeah, and I loved also toward the end of, you know, when the house gets flooded because the levee breaks, you know, and the house gets completely flooded. There's something.
There's your outro, really... Phil. Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Oh, the levee breaks.
Yes. There's something incredibly tragic and unsettling about watching a place that anyone calls home or called home. You know, the settings of like happy Christmases or dysfunctional Christmases or whatever, but memories were created there. There's something really unsettling about watching it get totally ruined right in front of you.
I think
they did a beautiful job showing that.
Basically, is you know, even though this movie is just popcorn fun, it does have a little theme of just watching the past literally get washed away and letting go of it as nature and the world to swallow it up. You know,
it is about moving on from the past, I think, is one of the main themes in this, I think, if I had to guess. But
along with Don't Get Eaten.
Don't Get Eaten, too, yeah. But it definitely says, you know, that the house had, the house was a very simple, believable setting. But I definitely agree, Christy. It was built in a way that still gave it a very eerie sort of feel to it.
And there was, you know, the father-daughter thing going on in this movie. I'm not going to say it wasn't well done, because I think it was well done, and the emotions that were communicated and the relationship that was portrayed was all very well done. But you're trapped in a basement with killer alligators. Is that really the time you're going to have that conversation?
Yeah, that was kind of, I understand, you know, maybe she was nervous and wanted to keep talking, but that sounds like a bad idea when you're trying to tiptoe around giant reptiles. They want to eat your ass.
See, I did not have a problem with that, because the way that I was sort of looking at that was, you know, you're at the, you might possibly be at the end of your lives here.
I guess, yeah.
You may really have things that you need to say to one another. And that's why, even though, I mean, that is a typical, by the way, horror movie or survival movie trope where, okay, like the couple that's been completely, you know, estranged from each other. Okay, they're going to sit and have this long, deep conversation and straighten everything out because they think they're going to die. So that didn't bother me as much because to me, that's just a typical trope of the genre. Like, it just happens all the time, so I'm just used to it. But I do know that if I were in a life-threatening situation like that and, you know, I thought I was going to die and I was maybe trapped with somebody that I had had issues with or felt estranged from, I sure as hell would sit there and try to patch that up before I actually, you know, exited the world. So so that's probably why I did not have a problem with it. I just think to me it makes emotional sense. Okay, maybe not in the real world, but emotionally it makes a form of sense. So anyway.
I see your point, Chrissy. Though I think I'm on the side of or I lean more to Abe and Eric's point too, because it was just another eye-rolling moment I felt. But again, the movie was an eye-rolling film, so you know, you just go with the flow. Midnight movie. Mike, what was your opinion on that?
Uh-oh, the Gators got him.
Uh-oh. Never smile at a crocodile. Da, 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 da.
Mike?
God, the god, I've never seen him. Death roll him right
Hello?
Now.
Hello? Oh, there he is. There he is.
I was having trouble unmuting the mic.
Gotcha. There's an alligator. I figured out
there are supernatural alligators, and they're fucking up our podcast.
They're angry. They're making her laugh at the movie, and now they want revenge.
One she shot 9 times in the throat, because realistically, these alligator hunters just have one gun, and you can blow its head off like in one shot. Like that.
Yeah, I was going to call that out, but I felt we'd done enough.
Yeah, that was pretty stupid. Never mind her arm being in there and it not being destroyed. But yeah, these moments where we have those technical difficulties, I usually take out, but we'll keep them in for this episode because of all the alligators that are killing us.
just leave out that explanation.
Supernatural alligators. Chris uses them. that was unfortunately an issue, I felt. But once she got the gun, I mean, that was huge. It's just that it didn't pay off.
She didn't ration her bullets. That was the problem.
Yeah. I mean, it paid off cool how it happened. But again, if it was more not a B movie, it would have been used a little differently and in a better way, I would think. But
I did totally laugh when he's like yelling for her after there's like, I don't know, 9 or 8 gunshots or something. He's like, what's going on or something like that. And she's like, I killed one of them. I was like, no shit.
You're right. Ooh,
no, the alligator's got a gun.
oh my God, you're right. They're going to use it against her now. That would have been that. Now that would have made this movie.
That's the sequel.
That's right.
Now they have.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be Crawler.
All right. I felt the levee breaking was coincidentally right at that moment. Never mind the fact that we didn't even know there was a levee until that very moment. I mean, I don't think it was mentioned once prior to when.
Yeah, they didn't set that up very well.
Yeah, that was kind of unfortunate. But I still don't understand why they just didn't wait it out once they got out of the basement. Once you get out of the basement, you
it's
can let
not them. As entertaining, that's why.
Yeah, I know. It's not. Well, that's the thing. Right when they got out of the basement, I looked at my watch. Well, or I should say my phone, because I didn't wear my watch. I had my phone clock. And I immediately said, oh, there's still another 30 minutes. Oh, all right. So the movie isn't over yet. Because I thought it was over right then. I was like, oh, okay, the rescue's going to happen. That's it. But then you notice 30 minutes ago, oh, something stupid's going to happen. And then they go, let's wait and go through the water and go to the boat. I go, okay, here we go. Another 30 minutes.
Yeah, it was tremendously amusing to me, though, that they just got washed right back into the house.
I know.
That made me laugh really hard.
And it was totally coincidence, too, because you know they would have been washed to the side or something, but right through the door into the house again. It was like, oh, okay. Mike, you going to say something?
Yeah, is it just me? What, did something happen to the boat that the rescue guys had? Because that was a hell of a lot closer than the one at the gas station.
Yeah, that kind of vanished, isn't it?
A true point. Yeah, it just disappeared. You're right. Yeah, because the one that was
washed away along with the SUV.
Yeah, okay. Well, didn't the SUV get washed away with the levee, not with anything before that?
No, it went before the levee broke.
Oh, it did, okay. Yeah, all right. Well, they should have set that up, too, and let us know that the cops...
I think we're picking nits at this point.
Yeah.
We've clearly established this movie's not based in reality.
Right. So the question is, do you just have fun with it? And it seems like a lot of folks did. A lot of people were also like, well, you know, I've seen better killer animal films too. So,
well, and if people out there are looking for a serious killer alligator movie, check out Blackwater. That one's really well done. And well, I can't say it's realistic cause I don't know my shit well enough, but it seemed pretty realistic to me. And actually scary.
And Rogue was pretty fun, even though it was
right.
Really fun. Rogue was really good. Yeah.
Right. So, right. Blackwater is about a family that's, on vacation on Australia, and, their boat sinks and they're trapped in some trees, surrounded by saltwater crocodiles as the tide is rising.
Mm-hmm.
Rogue is about a bunch of tourists who are vacationing in Australia whose boat sinks, and they're trapped on an island by a giant alligator as the tide is rising.
They're completely very similar in film. Setup. Rogue is a shinier, bigger budget effort, whereas Blackwater is a little grittier and to me, scarier.
Right. Rogue is more of a adventure horror film.
Yeah, definitely.
And Blackwater is more survival horror. Rogue is by Greg McLean, who did Wolf Creek.
It has a great cast because it has a Jarrett from Wolf Creek stars in it.
Yep.
As well as Roger Mitchell from many things, including that Vin Diesel film. What the hell is that one called?
Oh, Pitch Black.
Pitch Black, yeah. So
Silent Hill?
She's in Silent Hill, too. Okay. Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, it is a beautifully shot film, Rogue. You could see how it's probably financed by the Australia Tourism Board, which doesn't seem to understand that killer crocodiles are not an attraction. where Blackwater is more of a gritty kind of thing. I personally prefer Blackwater. Blackwater was by Alan Trauke, who's the guy who directed The Reef. I really like those films. I mean, to me, you have those two films and Lake Placid, which obviously is on the different end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Which is are the quintessential killer croc films. The 1980 movie Alligator, I saw a bunch when I was younger, but I have not seen in over.
That's actually coming out on a Blu-ray edition this year. Later,
is it?
Really? Interesting.
Yes. From where?
I would like to try that out, but I remember it being pretty not great. Like, it didn't age well.
I think it is Kino Larber, maybe?
Hmm.
Okay.
It's been out of print for a long time.
Yep,
and,
it sure has. But it's coming. Coming out as a Blu-ray by... Oh, here it is. Let me see. Blu-ray, 1980... Film Blu-ray coming by.
I see it on Amazon, 21 something.
Oh, it's there?
Robert Forster.
Oh, it's already listed on Amazon?
Only three left in stock, so it's just already out?
Oh, it's already out.
Oh, I don't know if it is. I'm not sure if this is a bootleg or what it is. Oh, it's an import from Korea, so that explains
it.
Okay. Yeah. So the,
No buy! At least not for me.
Yeah, so the new one, the one that's coming to the States or Region A, I guess it would be called. I think it's Kino Lorber, which always puts out a good product, but I'm not 100% sure.
But Blackwater is my recommendation for a really good alligator movie.
Also, Mike, you forgot that films like Wolf's Creek and such were probably financed by the
Australian vacation companies there because they thought that would be something that would, hey, you can come and walk in the middle of nowhere and whatnot. I don't know.
Are you sure it's not the movie Giant Crocodile? Because that's coming out by Synapse Films.
You know what? No, Alligator is coming out. I'll look it up now. I'm going to go to a place I said. But my joke didn't work. I was trying to make a funny joke about how Wolf Creek was sponsored by the Australian government. But
Okay.
It probably was.
It was. Yeah, right. But I meant the tourist part of the Australian government. But that wasn't. It didn't work. My joke failed. Let's see. I can't find it here right now. But I'm not lying here. I saw it.
I don't think you're lying to us.
Yeah, but there is The Great Alligator from 1979, Italian film by Sergio Martino, that's out there by Code Red Blu-ray, and that came out last year. But The Alligator, here it is, Alligator Blu-ray disc details. Let's see if I can get that information. Yeah, I still can't find that information, but oh well. Yeah, but it someone had posted it, and I swore it was Queen of Laura, but I can't verify it at this time.
Don't stress out about it. Just post it on Facebook if you find it.
And you could find it on YouTube to watch. There's a film called Dark Age. It was like a 1987 Australian croc film that's supposed to be good. I haven't had a chance to watch it. Again, that's available, I think, on YouTube to watch. There's some out. There's a lot of shitty alligator films.
Oh yeah, there's no
yes,
Georgia,
yes there are.
Yeah.
And then there was the one that I posted on the website, which was I was looking for killer alligator films, and there was the killer alligator film about an alligator who is being transported on an airplane and breaks out of its containment and causes the plane to crash. And the only problem is it's not a movie; is that it actually really happened. And I don't understand how that did not get turned into a film.
Cracks on a plane.
Yeah, I mean, seriously.
Speaking of Alligator, that actually has over 80% on Rotten Tomatoes. It 17 reviews.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. That is pretty
good. I get confused as to which one of these are Alligator and which are Crocodile, because I don't care.
The same. Same.
But there's also I can't remember if I actually ever watched this or not. I remember seeing a preview for this in a theater back in the day. It came out in 2007, called Primeval.
Oh yes, I saw that.
That's the African.
Yeah, about
2007 was the same year for Blackwater and Rogue and Primeval.
Okay.
Primeval was basically the Deep Star Six of that particular group.
Yeah, that was about Big Chap, wasn't it?
Well, here's the thing. Primeval is actually based on a real crocodile.
That's what I'm saying. Right. It was called Big Chap, I believe.
No, Gustav, I think, is the
Gustav,
name of
Gustav, that's right. Gustav. I'm thinking crocodile. Of no, yeah, Gustav.
And Gustav has been alive since... I actually just looked this up yesterday when I was talking to somebody. Gustav has been alive since 1955 and is estimated to have killed over 300 people.
Jesus Christ.
So that's like a really big, fucking mean, nasty crocodile.
But they're not Americans, right?
I'm sure at least a few of them were Americans.
Oh, well, then that's a problem.
Oh, what a good representative.
Yes. I don't know. Oh, and then there's those mini alligators that aren't even called alligators. I forget what they're called.
Caimans?
Yeah. There was one that when I lived in Hudson, New Hampshire, which is two towns away from here, one was walking down the street once, and it was like 4 feet long because someone had one and it escaped. It was not good. Yeah, it was big news in a town of where bears and turkeys are. It was kind of big news. Yeah.
Well, if someone lets a caiman loose, that's kind of like people getting upset because somebody's pet garter snake got loose.
Well, not when it's 4 feet long and everybody thinks it's an alligator.
Well, it's 4 feet long, but half of that's tail. It's like a monitor lizard. It's
ignorance instigates panic.
I don't know, four blind panic. I mean,
but it still looks like an alligator. And you usually don't see it in New Hampshire, put it that way.
Not everybody is a science teacher, Mike.
Yeah.
And it just takes Google, do I panic?
If you're
panic.
That's good advice. If you're in the middle of the street and you're wondering if you should panic or not, you should stop in the middle of the street and Google it.
People weren't really panicking. What it was like people would stopped and started taking pictures. And then the newspaper came and it was on the front page of the newspaper and all that stuff. Kind of yeah, that was kind of embarrassing.
All right. Well, we've kind of gone off the rails here. Do we have anything else to say about Crawl?
Well, Chrissy just texted me saying she can't, that she lost us, and yet we see her right here.
She's muted.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah, there you go.
No, I totally lost you. I could not hear anything, no matter what I did. I could see the little pictures of each of you talking, changing, but I could not hear you. And I wasn't muted. I muted because I took out my wireless key, and I didn't want you to get blasted with, like, you know, the outside noise from my house.
Right, right.
So that's why I muted myself. But, no, I couldn't hear you.
Right. Well,
but now yes. I can. So
Eric asked a question, which is, any other items that we missed, any plot points or anything that anybody wanted to bring up that
I did have one thing.
Go ahead.
I hope you didn't mention it. I thought one of the places where the film excelled in this was in the setup. It was super brief, but we did get a backstory and everything we needed to know. Like, we knew what her issue was, okay? We get an immediate sense of what all of her relationships were like. We get the full setup for the hurricane, everything, and it's all done in, like, under 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And anything additional that we needed to know was sort of spooled out, either visually or during the course of the action. And I really feel that this is really the way these films, whether they're serious or campy fun like this, should work. For example, when she's in her dad's condo, right, she finds a bottle of meds. We can't really see what they are, but based on the condition of the condo and later on the condition of the house, I could assume it had to do with depression. You know, she did mention to her sister that they got divorced. So we know that's going on. So we know why the father might be depressed. When she gets to the condo, there's a giant bottle of whiskey that's over half gone. There's a bunch of empty whiskey bottles on the counter. I mean, those visual cues told me everything I needed to know. The place was a mess. I knew the father was depressed. That nobody had to come out and be like, oh, he's so depressed because they got divorced. You know what I mean? It was all spelled out for you right there if you were willing to look for the cues. And I did think that that was one of the places that this movie really did well. And I really wish that most action, you know, whether they're silly or not, films did as well as this one did with that, because I really think that was well done.
Cool.
Thanks.
Anything else anybody want to bring up? Anything?
I'm good.
Right, I'm good. All right.
Sounds good. So I guess we can do some house cleaning stuff before we give our final thoughts. And first off, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan?
I do. That's the one where I'm the one that has to keep things under control and not act silly. That's the less fun part. It's called the Askancy Podcast. It's spelled Askancity. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify.
Excellent. And Mike, me, you, and Eric are going to do a new podcast. I think we're going to do it August 12th, which is a Monday.
Yes. August 12th, we're doing our nude podcast. Tune in to watch. That is Cinema a la Carte, where we're going to be talking about a film that we otherwise wouldn't have talked about on Dark Discussions.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep, that's good. And so people should start looking out for that. That's coming out maybe a quarterly type thing, or no, a monthly thing, I think we decided.
I think we decided a monthly.
Yeah, yeah. So keep an eye out for that. Chrissy, you have a book signing at, like, the coolest place ever?
I do. I have a book signing coming up at Howe Caverns in Howe's Cave, New York, which is in Schoharie County. It is near, I believe, Cooperstown, so like you could go visit the Baseball Hall of Fame if you wanted to. I will be there Saturday, August 3rd from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Howe Caverns has a lot of fun stuff to do. There's caving, there's rock climbing, there's all kinds of great stuff. They have a nice little motel on the property. I will be there signing copies of my book, The Shadows Behind. If you do come there and purchase a copy from me, you will get an exclusive book that is going to be published and is only going to be given out to those people who purchase books from me at Howe Caverns. The remainder will probably just be left in the gift shop for them to kind of sell to tourists. So anyway, and you can find out more about me at ChristyPetersonSchoonover.com.
All right, very good. And any other items anybody want to bring up, like news or whatnot? One news I want to bring up, which is the film Cats.
Is
coming. Well, it's a film that I wouldn't want to usually see, but that's a film I take my kids to anyway, so I'm going to go probably see it. But it is the feature film, feature film debut of the great Taylor Swift.
Well, so, whatever. It looks like a piece of crap.
It looks weird.
There were many memes this afternoon on Twitter about that freaking trailer that was released. People are shitting all over this thing already.
Well, because I'm looking at it now because I just saw something about it. I guess they're doing CGI cat people.
Like yeah.
CGI. Okay, I have heard nothing about
digital
this.
Digital fur technology. That's the phrase that's being tossed about.
And it really is falling into the Uncanny Valley area. This looks weird.
So is it going to be like Gollum from
it's basically if you are familiar, I've never seen the musical, but I've certainly seen the people in costume.
Yeah.
It's basically they're doing digital makeup, right? So instead of doing actual makeup and costumes, so they're cat people.
Phil, think of the lion from The Wizard of Oz, but instead of actual prosthetics and fur, it's all CGI on.
That's weird. That's too bad.
It is.
Wait a minute. Weird. So it's like Cats, like Jellicle Cats, that thing?
The musical, the Broadway thing.
The show that was on Broadway and that did the tour throughout the country and all that stuff.
Oh.
Yeah, they're making a movie adaptation to it, similar to like they did with Chicago and whatnot. But
I'm not going to watch this. I do believe that Taylor Swift is capable of singing the songs from this musical very well, but whole thing looks freaking ridiculous, and I will have no part of it.
I really have to go watch a trailer now to see how much ridiculousness is actually involved.
Yeah, I mean that's my kids will love it, so obviously I'll bring them unless it gets crappy reviews.
So who else will love it?
Myself, because
furries, it's a furry will love it.
Who?
Oh God, that's so rude.
You actually not know what a furry is?
Oh,
never mind. We'll talk about
it. Yeah, we'll get to it someday.
One day your parents will sit you down and explain.
All right, I'll have to text you, Eric, to ask what's going on here.
Oh,
just go do a Google search for furry. It can't backfire at all.
Keep your safe search on, though.
Thanks for ruining it.
Tom Cruise is going to be at San Diego Comic-Con to debut the trailer. Well, actually, not debut the trailer, but talk about his new Top Gun sequel. You hear about that?
Yeah, Top Gun Maverick.
Oh,
The trailer's already out. Because as we know, when you're 55 years old, you know, you're still going to be riding the cockpit.
On way to the danger zone.
That was the best song I have ever heard in my entire life. Oh my God, that was awful.
Three from Hell is now getting promoted pretty hard right now, so I assume... that is coming out soon enough, but I'm not sure. It trailer, two of them are now out, I think. What other news?
But I'll be going to see the movie.
Yeah. Let's see. Any other news?
I was actually really intrigued by Ready or Not.
Oh, yeah. That's like woman, fun.
That just looked like stupid fun. Like, yeah. Where the girl is, like, running around the house in a wedding dress. And there's that one girl who keeps fucking up. She's like, I'm sorry. I don't know what I'm doing.
What I'm doing, yes.
Right. That actually... Pretty
looked,
good.
Yeah, that looks.
Yeah, that fun. That'll probably be my. That's coming out like the day before my birthday, so it'll be almost certainly my birthday movie for this year.
Yeah, yep. we'll probably do an episode on that. I think.
Oh yeah, definitely.
That just looks fun.
It has that chick from The Babysitter. She stars in it. Samantha.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. They also just dropped the second trailer for the second part of It.
Yeah, I just mentioned that.
Said that.
Yeah.
I watched a movie that's been released on VOD. Some people may be interested in it. It's actually a sequel to The Woman, which was written by Jack Ketchum. And it's directed by the woman who played the woman in The Woman.
Oh yeah, I saw McIntosh. That.
And
it's a sequel to that story. I did rent it and I watched it. It's not going to be for everybody. It's got some pretty in your face.
What's the name of it, Eric?
Darlin is the name of the movie.
Oh yeah.
It's got some in your face anti-religious messaging, which I found will be quite heavy handed. So Mike would probably hate this movie. But for those who are interested in the sequel to The Woman, this is it. It's here. So Darlin.
Yeah, which itself was a sequel to Offspring or The Children?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Which was both of those films are pretty good too. Is it worth an episode, you think, Eric?
I need somebody else to watch it and see what
Is it? Where's it available?
I found it on iTunes. I'm sure it's available other places as well.
Is it worth doing maybe episode triple, like one episode on the three films together?
I wouldn't want to do that personally.
Okay. Also, Luz, L-U-Z, some sort of serial killer type film, just is getting rave reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, and I think it's only VOD. It may even be a foreign
anything
film.
Anything about that?
Yeah. It's Rotten Tomatoes, as mentioned. It's supposed to be coming out tomorrow, so I'm assuming it'll be on VOD.
Here we go, on the fly, wiki. Luz. A young cab driver drags herself into the brightly lit entrance of a rundown police station. A demonic entity follows her, determined to finally be close to the woman it loves.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's got. Yeah,
that's
weird.
Really different.
Screen Media Films, 88% good reviews. Variety, Roger Ebert.com, AV Club, Hollywood Report, all of them giving us good reviews.
I was going to say, Roger Ebert is dead.
Yeah, no, but his website is RogerEbert.com.
Yeah, they put out reviews still.
Yeah, they it's become like a trademark name now.
Basically, they're just like selling his dead name.
Yeah. They're keeping his name alive and selling it.
Yeah, well, I think his widow and he agreed to have that done. So I don't think it's,
if he was on board with it, then it's okay.
Yeah.
I got a couple of weeks ago, I got myself some new copies of the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series.
Yeah, explain that. Those are books, right?
Yeah, those were kids' books that were quite well known for not so much the stories themselves, but the illustrations by Stephen Gammell, which are very visceral, dark, and freaky looking as hell.
Yeah, that's one like with the floating head and shit.
Yeah, the floating head. And they were very well known and very popular. And I remember growing up reading these as a kid and really enjoying them. And I wanted to make sure I got my hands on some just, in case an event be out of print or something like that. You never know. But I got all three of them for a pretty good deal. About $22 for all three. And it's very nostalgic to go through these again. But I also got them because I wanted to kind of look through them and get some context in terms of style and presentation for the upcoming film based off them.
Now, did you see the documentary? Because we had the screener, and I let you.
I gave it over to you.
Oh, no, I haven't got a chance to do so yet because I was wondering if you were, if anybody else was on board with the idea.
Well,
no,
well,
if you want to watch that documentary, I totally forgot all about it. My life has been so fucking crazy. So, is there, can we still see it? I mean, or
Basically, I sent all the DDP people the screener because we received the screener through our Dark Discussions at AOL.com.
Secret Contact email. Network.
Yeah, and they sent it to us, and so yeah, if anybody wants to watch it and give this, you know, five, or I should say 3-minute review of it, you know, during what we've been watching segment like we're doing right now, that for sure, Abe. So, you know, let us know what you think of it. Same with you, Chrissy. So that's cool, Abe. Yeah, so there is a documentary about the books that is coming out if it hasn't come out
yet. I think it's out right now on DVD.
Okay, so you can see that. Yeah, so people may want to check that out if they're fans of the books.
Speaking of books, we for those who enjoyed our Pet Sematary review, please stay tuned because we're going to have another one on Stephen King's other novel, Salem's Lot, down the road with some guest hosts.
Right. Yeah. We're probably going to record that late August, early September, or something. So watch for that to drop. Also, some other news: Taika Waititi is returning to direct Thor 4. Bill and Jay and Silent Bob reboot. I think the name of the film is
I'll
coming up.
I'll probably watch that despite myself. I can't help myself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those are fun characters. Game of Thrones had 38 Emmy nominations.
Which is bizarre. Now, a lot of those are going to be technical nominations, performances. And the primary criticism of the show, of course, was the writing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it got any writing nominations.
The finale got either best director or best writing, as well as best episode or something. I don't know. I can't remember.
Mm.
Well, that was a pretty good episode. The
half of it
indie
was.
Scenes. Yeah, the first half was awesome. Yeah. It was and the very last couple of scenes too with Sansa being crowned and stuff.
Yeah, whatever. That was
cool. So that's some news there. Abe, have you read any of the stories yet in those books?
Oh, the Scary Stories one? Yeah, they're very short. I mean, they're only like maybe a page or a couple, 3 pages long. But
how long is each book?
I would say about 80 pages each.
Okay.
But what's really nice is they're basically almost like campfire tales, you know, the kind of thing you sit around with a family or some friends and stuff like that and read them to each other. They're for young readers, of course, but I think what's very impressive was just, you know, that this was actually available to readers because it had faced a lot of controversy during its initial release because of the drawings and stuff. There was actually a more censored version that was released with different drawings, which caused a lot of a nasty stir with the fans, and they managed to re-released them with the actual original art. But it's just kind of goes to show you that some people can get really uptight about certain things. But I think we're getting to this age where even kids' books and young adult books are getting a lot more free with kind of content they can present.
I'd say it's returning to that, because like Grimm's Fairy Tales, not so pleasant.
No, what I'm saying is a lot less uptight. I mean, because they weren't. Yeah, the Grimm's Fairy Tales were very graphic, but you know, for a while it was starting getting the censorship was off the fucking charts of a lot of stories, and now we're just kind of now getting more freedom back.
Yeah, all right. No, that's fair. But yeah.
Yeah,
it's probably, as Eric said, getting back that way. Yeah.
You're right. Eric's right about this Grim Fairy Tale because, I mean, those fucking stories were really
seriously messed up to be telling kids.
Yes. Holy shit!
Well, I love it. You know what? There was I would agree with Eric though, because when we were kids, it seemed like they were just more free about what went into certain books. There really wasn't. I mean, now it's like micromanaged. Like, well, for this age group, we have this kind of language, and for this age group, we have this kind of language. I mean, maybe that was always going on in the past, but I don't remember that. And I mean, I remember the books that we were reading when we were kids being pretty, like, you know, graphic and stuff. Like, not, you know, definitely not what I think kids would be reading today. Although some of the stuff, some of the young adult stuff today is pretty,
out there.
It's pretty intense. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That's an interesting comment, Eric. I'd actually have to think about that. I don't read a whole lot of young adult right now. So,
well, nor do I. That was just my initial reaction to what Abe said.
Well, no, because we have things like Death Games from the Hunger Games. We have some dark romances and a lot more horror stories. There's a young adult story about a kid who basically joins some kind of faction that manages the undead and fights zombies.
But those are for teenagers more than the books that you're talking about.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is still there's still beforehand there were a lot more sterile in some places.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the choice of what we were allowed to read and stuff was not as much as we have today.
Right. I mentioned this in a prior episode, but since this, we're talking about news and stuff, I on Eric's recommendation, I read the book The Outsider by Stephen King, and it is a solid book, and based off of the type of book it is, it's half police procedural and half horror film book. Oddly, the police procedural is much better than the horror part.
And I would agree with that. Yeah,
much better. And I would say that that part of the book demonstrates that Stephen King is definitely able to or could have made a career out of himself being a police procedural, you know, James Patterson type author rather than.
For a second, when you say he could have made a career for himself, I'm like, yeah, he could have been a writer.
but a writer for a police procedural type stuff rather than horror based off of this book.
But that's kind of like saying the Beatles could have had a career in jazz if they wanted to. I mean,
no.
Why would they? I mean, no. If you have a chance between having Stephen King's success or anybody else's, go with Stephen King.
I think everybody's misunderstood my point. My point is that he's as good of a writer of police procedurals as any writer that does police procedurals.
I think some of his best writing is non-horror. Yeah. There's a story he wrote. I think he actually labels it as a novella. It's in one of his collections. I want to say Nightmares and Dreamscapes. And it's really just the retelling of his experience with his son's little league team, and it's a really captivating story. Even I give not a shit about baseball,
and it's not a horror at all.
And it's a real life recounting of his son's journey through this season of baseball, and it's really well told.
Wonder which son, Joe or Owen?
I think it was Owen, actually.
Okay, very good. It's true. And the unfortunate thing with the second part of the book, I think, is more the fact that he introduces characters that are from other stories. And so, you know, generally those characters have plot armor. Mm-hmm. And so by the end, when the horror stuff begins, you pretty much can figure out who's right.
That bugs you way more than it bugs me.
Yeah. Well, I've always liked – I love standalone books because – everybody in theory could be a red shirt. And when it's series of books or characters come in from other books, it kind of, I lose some of the suspense.
Phil?
Yes.
Just some minor criticism here, or rather constructive criticism. I think you need to dial back your use of the term red shirt because you're misusing it. A red shirt is somebody who's obviously going to die. If you're saying anybody could be a red shirt, it's not that obvious, so they're not a red shirt.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. Let me rephrase then. If rather than using the term red shirt, it is easier to guess what characters are not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
In certain stories, especially in the second half of The Outsider, based off of the fact that you know they aren't from other books, while other characters that came in from other books are less apt to be killed off. So the suspense of knowing who's going to die, it really just came down to when they were going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that was unfortunate, I felt. Versus, say, The Dead Zone, where you, if you didn't see the movie and you just read that book, you don't know what's going to happen and who's going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And such. But, yeah, that's what it is here. So, yeah, The Outsider, a pretty good book, for sure. Anything else anybody want to bring up that they read, watched, news, info, video games, anime? All right.
Nope. Good.
So let's give our final thoughts on our crawl. So let's start with you, Chrissy.
I'm going to say this movie was a hell of a lot of fun. If you're looking for yet another alligator or slash crocodile movie that is fun to watch, the guy certainly mentioned some other ones that are really excellent, if not better than this. But this is just totally fun. Do not go into this expecting anything but silly fun. And I like what we said earlier about this movie could totally be a drinking game. If you took a drink for every time something unrealistic happened, you would be wasted by about 5 minutes. And that's what makes it so awesome. So I think if you are really looking for a movie with a strong sense of place, which I know that nobody really gives a crap about except for me, but that's really important to me. I love movies with strong sense of place. Then this is your movie. But go into this having fun. Definitely a great ride. And you know what? If you can go see it in the theater with a really great audience, I mean, that's hit or miss, but try to see it in the theater just because the audiences are really having a great time with it. Everybody seems to understand that this is just to go and be silly. It's not supposed to be serious. So there you go.
Mike.
Yeah, it's a fun film. Go in expecting silly and stupid. And... you know, vicious alligators with the personalities of chihuahuas, right? Just extremely hyper aggressive. And you'll enjoy it. Just put the logic circuits out of commission for about 90 minutes.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, first off, it's interesting to see Crawl, Annabelle comes home in Midsummer, all fighting for the same dollars right now. But
three pretty different movies.
Yeah, but the same type of audience would probably see them.
But they're all fun horror films, right? And
yeah.
We have done an awful lot of films in the, you know, the deeply serious movies, which have their place, don't get me wrong. But it's nice to see some fun coming back into the horror genre.
Right, right. Yeah, and even though Midsommar, you could argue, is a serious film, it is over the top in some points, which makes it also a quote unquote fun horror film, even if that even makes sense. But either way, for Crawl, I think I feel almost identical to Mike on it. So, you know, it's check your brain at the door. It's not a great film, but if you like midnight drive-in films, this is a good one. In other words, if this is like a 1975 film, I probably would like it more than I would it being 2019 and seeing it, just for the fact that I wasn't expecting a drive-in film when I guess I should have. So I'm not a huge fan of the film, but it was still somewhat fun, and a lot of people are liking it, and it's probably a great date film. I'll give it that, too. Eric?
I can't add a whole lot. This is a silly, fun movie. If you're into that kind of thing, check it out.
Abe?
I enjoy this movie overall. It's got a lot of really silly things going on. This over the top animal creature behavior and stuff like that. That's really unrealistic to the real life animals. But that's really know what this film's trying to be. It's a fun creature flick. It's got some really intense action scenes, some nice, gooey gore, some really good sound design, good performances. It's just really fun. If you go into that with that mindset that you're just looking for a creature flick, that's a big, fun B-movie, you'll have a good time. Check out it's still in theaters. I think it's still, overall, just big fun.
All right, very good. So that's 2019, Alexander Aja's latest film. I think the budget was around $13.5 million. First week, it got about $12.1 million, so it's going to make its money back. Released by Ghost House Pictures, which is basically Sam Raimi's clone of Blumhouse. It is probably going to leave the theaters fairly soon, but it may have one or two more weeks. So if you want to see it, you better go now. Otherwise, wait until October, November, December. It'll be probably on VOD and disc. And with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in. Listen to us talk about Crawl. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.
See you later, alligator.
Well, I saw my baby walking with another man today. Well, I saw my baby walking with another man today. When I asked her what's the matter, this is what I heard her say. See you later, alligator. She told me.